Did you know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's deities were named Radha Madhava? I was just thinking how during Kartik and Vrindavan, they sometimes those deities will visit the temple at Krishna Balaram Mandir. They'll have Bhaktivinoda Thakur's deities. I don't know when or what precedes that, how they get that, but I've seen those deities. They're really beautiful. Have you seen them too?
Yeah. Yeah. In
Orissa. Orissa. Okay. Oh, ISKCON Temple. So they stay in ISKCON Temple. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So he wrote that song in memory of his, or his, in honor of his deities. Okay. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading a beautiful chapter, continuing from yesterday. The title of the chapter is what? Do you remember? Yes. It's actually just Prayers by Queen Kunti. That's the timeline, but this story also includes that pastime, yeah. Vipada Shantuta Shashvat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru Bhavato Darshanam Yatsyad Apunar Bhavadarshanam. Okay, so let's do the word for word. Vipada, together, calamities. Santu, let there be. Ta, all. Shashvat, again and again. Tatra, there. Tatra, and there. Jagat Guru, O Lord of the universe. Bhavata, your. Darshanam, meeting. Yat, that which. Syat, is. Apuna, not again. Bhavadarshanam, seeing repetition of birth and death. You know that phrase, puna, punas, charvita, charva, right? So puna, puna, again and again, like a cow chewing its cud, right? Over and over. But apuna means not. So whenever you put the A in front, it negates it. Apuna, not again. And then also there's this Sanskrit phrase, tatra, tatra. So it's like saying, in English we would say, here and there, everywhere, right? Here and there. So when you repeat it, it's kind of like over here, over there, right? Reminds me of the prayer of Nrisingadev. Yeto, yeto, right? Yeah, right. That a similar idea of like, yeah, yeah. So over here, not over here, right? Over there. And another phrase here is, there was one that, the first word, vipada. Okay, so vipada means calamities. So we have a song. This is just a little question for you. See if you can recall. We have a bhajan that has this word in it, or the Bengali version of this word. Do you recognize the word? Which song it might be in? And it's vipade in that particular song. Yeah. Sampade vipade. So what does it mean? Can you use your microphone?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sampade vipade jivanamaran, like in wealth, or like in good times or in bad times, in life or death. Like may I always remember your lotus feet.
Yeah, so sampade vipade. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, in good fortune or in bad, may I always remember your lotus feet. So the same idea here, vipada, calamities. Translation, I wish that all those calamities, so she had just recalled in the previous verse the different calamities that they had gone through, right? She listed them. So she's speaking about those calamities. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Purport, generally the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities, worship or begin to worship the Lord. So has anybody here ever felt distressed and then it's been a motivator for worshiping the Lord? Raise your hand if you've ever had that experience. Okay, so mostly everyone. There's been time in our life where we're distressed. We're like, oh, I just need to go deeper in my spiritual life, right? Or the needy. There's people coming to Krishna lunch that need food or need some sort of spiritual solace. The intelligent, so those who are just thoughtful, like, why am I here in this world? What am I doing here? What is the purpose of life? And the inquisitive, just lots of questions, similar idea. The inquisitive is the one who's asking lots of questions. So all these four types of people, they come to Krishna. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. So-called calamities. That's interesting. Prabhupada says so-called. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hoofs of a calf. Has everyone here seen a calf in your life? No? They're little tiny feet. Is it maybe, I don't know, how big like that maybe? Quite small. So such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. They have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. This material world is certified. This is another nice expression. This material world is certified by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. It's like you put a certification stamp on, right? This is a place of calamity, okay? So we've signed up for an unfortunate place to live. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. It's like if you sign up for, you move into a neighborhood and part of the, what fine print, it says, this neighborhood is full of gangs and people who use guns on a regular basis and loud parties at night. And then you settle into your new house and you're trying to make it comfortable, but you signed up for a place that's full of chaos. So similarly, we're in this world, we're trying to get comfortable. It's like a useless endeavor, right? They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. Vaikuntha, right? Vaikuntha means place free of anxiety. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false, because they are temporary. So spirit soul is above the temporary material energy. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, and there is no suffering. It's simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. No loss, all gain. Wow, what a sentence. I'm going to read that again. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. You can see why Krishna would be so grateful to the devotees who share his teachings with others, who distribute his books, who share the wisdom of Krishna consciousness, because once those jivas encounter Krishna, it's just good fortune going forward. You know, he's pulling them in. So we get to play a role in that, helping those jivas come to Krishna. So this is such a wonderful verse to meditate on. And we have to remember the context of this, where Queen Kunti is, this is right after this whole fiasco happened yesterday that we heard about in the class, right, with Ashwatthama and the weapon and this baby that was rescued by Krishna in the womb just before this weapon was released, and all of this dramatic thing that happened. And right after this, he says, okay, everything's safe now, I've taken care, now I'm heading out. And Queen Kunti and her family are offering prayers. So, you know, after a really dramatic event like that, people are often, you know, shaken, and it's kind of like a turbulent situation. Emotionally, you're still catching your breath, right? And then she's also commenting on other times that were really stressful for her and her family, that were calamities. Calamity is like an extreme word, right? Calamity. It's not just a little problem, it's a giant problem. So she mentions, like, there was a poison cake. The cousins of her children were constantly trying to kill her children. Can you imagine living that? Your children are constantly trying to be killed by this other part of the family. So in that situation, so she is saying, so we just have to understand this in context, that she's standing right in front of Krishna. So she's directly with Krishna when she's praying this. She's saying, because of all these calamities, you're here. And because you're here, we will not again see this material existence. We're free of this material experience because you're literally here in front of us, right? Krishna's come to the rescue. He's there. So she's standing before Krishna sharing this. And then also she's saying, you know, all these previous times we had these calamities, you are here. So what we sometimes think is that she's praying just for suffering. It can kind of... the idea can kind of be, well, I need to be a little bit self-flagellant, like I need to be a martyr, I need to just pray for a lot of troubles in my life so that I can remember Krishna. But her particular experience is that every time those calamities would happen, Krishna would come, and her bliss grew in association with Krishna. So for her, those sufferings weren't really sufferings. They were completely different from how we would experience suffering. There was never a moment where she got so caught up in the suffering that she forgot Krishna, right? Sometimes we get so caught up in our suffering that we actually forget Krishna. We forget, oh my gosh, there's a spiritual solution to this. I'm so anxious, right? I'm so consumed in my trouble. But for Queen Kunti, she was never, because she's such an elevated devotee, she was never separating the experience. So for her, those troubles brought her to Krishna, both in consciousness and literally Krishna coming to save them. And so because they're so, these experiences with Krishna are so wonderful, so transformative, of course she would want those same things that had happened before that would bring Krishna again. But she's not praying for suffering on its own merit just to have suffering, right? So we have to recognize the difference. And sometimes, you know, Prabhupada would warn us about, he would instruct us about finding inspiration from great devotees, but not imitating. So inspiration, not imitation, right? So one, it was one class he gave in Los Angeles where he said something really heavy. He was describing the story of Raghunath Das Goswami and how Raghunath Das Goswami would like eat the leftovers from, even the cows hadn't eaten these pieces of rice, and so austere. And then Prabhupada said to the audience, don't imitate Raghunath Das Goswami. If you do, you will, he actually used the words, you will fall down. So very heavy statement. If you imitate Raghunath Das, you will fall down. So yeah, you'll crash, right? You'll crash and burn. You won't be able to maintain it. So same with Queen Kunti, we can take inspiration from this. Okay, so how does this apply to our lives without necessarily also jumping in and praying, okay, Krishna, the reason I came to Krishna house is because I was in so much distress, so please let me run over and over so I can keep coming to the devotee, you know, like that. That would be kind of artificial. So what we can do is to apply this to our own life, we can think, well, one thing she's doing is she's looking back on the troubles she had. She's thinking, oh, okay, all those times I was with Krishna. So we can also do that. It's called hindsight, right? Hindsight. So we don't have to pray for more troubles. We have enough, usually in our daily life, we have a good supply of troubles, right? Most people. There's actually one, I just want to quickly mention this. I was doing some research on suffering, on people suffering and how that, what are some of the perks around that? And there was a research study that said that if people who don't suffer on a regular basis, who actually have it really good, like kind of a sheltered life, it's just, there's not much struggle at all, they tend to lack in empathy. They tend to not, they'll ask these people certain questions, like if I see someone struggling on the street, I'll offer them a hand, or different common human things, and their rate of answering those questions is a lot lower than the average person. So one of the advantages of kind of struggling in this world is that we also develop some empathy for others, right? We want to help because we've been through it. So looking at hindsight, so like, okay, I've been through all these things. How have those past struggles helped me in my journey to Krishna? And that's one way that we can emulate this example of Queen Kunti, is being reflective in our life. And seeing, okay, usually in this world, especially if we're a sincere soul, our struggles can be connected to Krishna. We can see a pattern. Wow, I was disillusioned here. I sought out, somebody who was a little bit more advanced than me, right? We can kind of trace our trajectory based on our struggles. And when we're in the struggle, so when Queen Kunti was in the moments of difficulty, when the house was about to be burned, when the cake with poison came into her, it wasn't that in those moments she was going, Haribo, woo, I'm so happy to have these struggles, now I'm remembering. It wasn't an artificial, joyful, like, she's still embodying the person of someone of this world that we can relate to, right? She's like, okay, in those moments she's trying to figure out how to escape or how to get out and how to, and calling to Krishna and remembering Krishna. But so in the moments where we were struggling, we were not necessarily ecstatic, right? But we can look back and think, well, somehow the path of this led me here, and we can feel some gratitude for those difficulties. So I want to ask you, and this is something we can brainstorm together, is what are some opportunities in the struggles of life? First, let me ask you, before we do that, because I know it's kind of a, let me just say, what are some of the, just like a quick round, what's the problem? What are some of the difficulties with struggles? What are some of the things you don't like about calamities? What is it for you? Just like quickly, anxiety, okay? The boring? Oh, interesting. Okay. Repetitive. You've had enough of them that they're like boring. Okay. Impairing. Yes. Okay. Discouraging. Mm-hmm. You don't sleep well, right? You're ruminating. Yeah.
Isolating.
Isolating. Yeah, that's a big one. Distracting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's see. We have all these things, and now with all of that, because we know these things can be distracting, they can take our time, they can make us toss and turn at night, they can be full of, they can cause us anxiety, right? They're just, they can be very distressing. And they can be very, they're very unique to every person. That's another thing I wanted to mention. There's a phrase, I think it's in psychology, maybe philosophy, but it's comparative suffering. And how we suffer more by comparing our suffering to others' suffering, right? So one form of suffering can be, I seem like, let's say we're struggling with getting our homework done, and then we see someone else sailing through their homework, and we think like, but they have something else going on that they're suffering with, and we're trying to compare, like my suffering, their suffering, whatever. It just becomes this game of comparison. And that never helps anyone because it's very unique to us. Our suffering is very subjective. Yeah, happy families are all alike, and unhappy families are all unhappy in their own way. Yeah, that's a good one, right? Do you want to comment on that, Christina? What it means, the explanation of it? Is that what you said, Nita? What does that mean?
So that's the very famous opening line to the book Anna Karenina by Tolstoy, I believe. And so it's expressing the same idea that when you have happy families, they're all kind of the same. They all have their similar reasons for being happy. But then if you have unhappy families, then each of them has kind of their own personal troubles that are unique from the others, but they're still all unhappy.
Yeah, it also makes me think that we tend to homogenize the group that's happy, like, oh, they're all happy,
yeah.
And they're all the same, and we tend to sometimes also not notice that they're all suffering in their own ways. That's just another angle on it, but yeah. Yes?
Our suffering is unique, like, no one else is going through this, it's just
me. Yeah, we feel like our suffering is unique, and it is unique, and at the same time, we can get in that space where we think it's just me suffering, it's all about me, woe is me, and like, there's that song, like, no one knows the troubles I've seen, right? It's kind of like, wistful, like, I mean, there's some truth to that sometimes people don't really know the troubles we've been through, right? So there's something only Krishna can really know, but also there's that wanting to wallow in, like, my suffering, you know, So what are some of the opportunities in our challenges? What are some things that we can, yes, and we can use the microphone so people can hear it.
Pushes you to surrender and it strengthens your faith.
Yeah. So it pushes you to surrender. Yeah. I want to mention that because I had that here on my list too, to deepen our trust in Krishna. So you know that pastime where Prahlad, who is in that painting right here, the little boy Prahlad with Nrsingadev, his father was abusive, and he was doing all kinds of things to get rid of his son. So there was one point where he actually got these demonic people to throw him off a cliff somewhere in India. There was a cliff, and Krishna and Prahlad is falling, but he's like Kunti Devi in the sense that during the suffering, he never once forgot Krishna, right? So he's falling. So who here has experienced a falling, like a feeling of falling? Like sometimes it's exhilarating, but sometimes it's terrifying, right? And people choose that, like sometimes they go out of their way to jump out of planes and things to feel that mix of like terror and exhilaration. But for the average person, I would say it's kind of an unpleasant feeling to be falling just off a building, right? Like, and you're not sure what's at the end. So there's that terror that happens just physiologically in the body. So Prahlad is falling, and he's praying to Krishna, and he's just peaceful. But Krishna didn't catch him right at the top. There was the cliff. Krishna wasn't right here. Krishna was at the bottom of the cliff. And so Prahlad had to go through that experience of falling And during that time, so we have that opportunity too, when we're going through a difficult time, it's an opportunity to go, okay, am I going to trust Krishna during this fall, this feeling of I'm falling, I don't know if he's going to catch me, but let me practice, let me try to trust that he will catch me, let me pray to him, please help me to trust you, right? And then we get an opportunity to get closer to Krishna. So yeah, I'll just share one quick anecdote. So I had that experience just recently I was in Europe and I was traveling by trains in Belgium, and somehow the trains aren't labeled, or I was just struggling a lot to figure out which train I was supposed to be on. And there were, you know, the announcements were in different languages and I just was confused. And so at one point I got on a train and I wasn't sure if it was the right train, and it was kind of chaotic and I was asking people, and it was just like, so I got on and the train started moving. So I already wasn't sure where I was going exactly. And then I reached down for my purse and it was gone. Like I was like, oh, where's my bag, my passport, my phone, my money, right? And so for a few minutes, I don't know how long, time kind of slowed down into this strange lull. I was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? And so in that moment, I felt extremely vulnerable. Like everything that I have to like hold on to for protection is gone. It wasn't actually gone, but I thought it was. And so I was in that moment, after kind of learning, stopping and breathing again, I was like, hey, you know, slow down the panic and just think other people have survived this situation. I'll be okay. And then I was like praying to Nrisingadev. And it's just an example of like, here's a small opportunity where I didn't even actually lose those items. They were in a backpack that I had thrown in when I was running to catch the train. I didn't remember throwing them in. So it was like one of those frenzy moments. And so I found them a few minutes later, but in those few moments, I had the opportunity to feel that feeling of falling. Oh my God, what's going to happen? Life's, you know, like the security that I normally have is being taken away, even if it's just in my mind, I thought it was being taken away. So what do we do in those situations? Do we then use those opportunities to go, okay, let me practice. Here's a practice opportunity, because at the end of life, that's what's going to be there. It's going to be a big, huge opportunity to show Krishna that we trust him, because no one else is going to be there when we go on to that final journey, right? I was thinking about this a lot when I was traveling, because I was traveling solo. Who here has traveled solo before? Alone? Yeah? There's something special about it, right? There's something about being alone when you're traveling, especially in a foreign country where you don't really know things too well, that it gives us an opportunity to trust Krishna and to have Krishna there with us on our ride. So that's how it's going to be at the end of life, is now after all my life of practicing with these small moments, let me show Krishna that I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to go through this dying experience and trust that Krishna will catch me. You know? So those are that was a really nice answer. Rasika Prabhu.
Our culture trains us, conditions us to think that when we have troubles, this is somehow that God has abandoned us, or, you know, there's something wrong with it. So when we have troubles, it gives us the opportunity to learn a new perspective, that actually when we have troubles, it's a sign of the Lord's mercy. And so over time, if we can learn to, when things happen, to train our mind to think, okay, this is the Lord having mercy on me. I think of a story of a young Russian girl who goes to a priest, and she's crying her eyes out, and the priest says, oh, what's wrong, my daughter, what's wrong? She says, God has abandoned us. And he says, well, what makes you think that God abandoned you? He says, my family, we have no troubles. And yeah. In at that time, in that culture, we're talking pre-revolutionary Russia, that was the mindset of the people, that troubles were a sign that the Lord was having mercy on you. Mm-hmm. So when you didn't have troubles, she felt abandoned by God, because her family had no struggles. Mm. So it's just a different perspective. So troubles give us the opportunity to readjust our conditioning, to realize that troubles are a sign of the Lord's mercy. And that was the perspective of Queen Kunti.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great point. Advaita Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the class. Along those lines, I really like how Srila Prabhupada touches on devotional service. And if someone is lucky enough to get in contact with devotional service, it is all gain. And, you know, trouble or difficulty within the realm of devotional service, it becomes something else, actually. Because there's devotion and there's love, those difficulties are not experienced as difficulties. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about it. They become a source of greatest of joys. Right? Like a mother. And a mother will do anything for a child.
Mm.
And that's not like a hassle or a chore for me. She does it with greatest of joys. Why? Because there's love. So devotional service is impossible without devotion.
Mm.
You know, without devotion is just a service, and God forbid it becomes a chore or, oh my God, I have to do it again. There's something of great value, the greatest value, and that is the quest of how do we get that devotion. Because the whole paradigm is shifted with that. Difficulty is not a difficulty anymore.
Yeah.
It becomes something completely different. And in terms of the paradigm shift, what has helped me is to always remember that we are in this world, but we are not of it. So.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned the love of a mother, because when we add devotion and that love piece, then we start to feel Krishna's softness. Instead of thinking, oh, troubles, and feeling like God is punishing me as harsh, we start to life starts to feel like we're being carried, like a mother's carrying us, like a Krishna's carrying us, and it feels gentle and soft. And even in the difficult moments, we can tap into that experience. Yeah, that's right.
Thinking in response to your question about it being opportunity, can be opportunity to surrender to Krishna, but also I was thinking, like, practically for me, during these times, it's opportunity for me to open my heart to the devotees and build that relationship. Because sometimes when there's no calamities, even in this world, you know, you're spending time with people, the connection is not so deep. But when you're there through the hard times, you can open up. That's when that connection builds, not just with others, but also like with Krishna and with the devotees. It's not just about the good times, but the hard times is what builds deeper connection.
That's a really good point, yeah. It's like we show up as our vulnerable selves. We realize, oh, I can't do it all alone. I need others. And then it allows for that reciprocal exchange of kindness and service and so on. Yeah, anytime. Thanks.
Responding to the same question, like, how is there an opportunity? Me, I realize that, like, when difficult times come, or just like moments where you realize that you lost something, you could have lost something valuable, like you could have fallen down, you could have hurt yourself, and you suddenly remember that Krishna is kind, that he didn't let me go through that.
Mm.
Like, it's just a reminder to me that, like, the process is working, because maybe 5-10 years ago, when I was not practicing so much, I would never remember, like, Krishna in such moments. But because now I remember, that means that, yeah, like, what I'm doing, what we're doing around devotees, it's working. Krishna is coming into our mind more often.
Nice.
It just gives nice faith that at the moments that we're not remembering, Krishna also will remember if we keep practicing.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good one. Next. And we'll wrap up soon. I just want to hear it.
Your story made me think of something that happened to me recently, a struggle, so to speak. I was in Prabhupada Village, and a couple of the devotees, we went to go see a movie, Mission Impossible. And we were coming back, and it was pretty late. It was like 10 o'clock. And as we're driving back, one of the devotees, Nitai Gore, he's like, hey, Max, I was staying in the temple guest room at the time. And he's like, Max, you know the temple closes at 9. They lock the doors at 9 o'clock, right? Did you keep your side door unlocked? And I was like, no, I didn't know they would close the temple. So I had all this anxiety start to seep in, like, oh gosh, I'm going to have to sleep outside. I'm going to have to use my t-shirt as a pillow. I'm not going to be able to charge my phone. All these worries were setting in. But then I was like, all right, well, Krishna clearly has a plan here. Let's just leave it to him and like chant, just not worry about it. Leave it to him. So we got there. Sure enough, all the doors were locked, every single one on the temple. But on the where they keep all the Tulsi plants, there was they had one window open. It was just a screen. So it was one of those moments for me. I was like, God, if you let me in, like I'll never do anything bad again. So yeah, we bust out the screen, and we moved the Tulsi plant to the side so we didn't break her. And there's a Vyasa-san on the other side, so I had to like dive head first to get to it. But we got in, everything was okay. So it was nice that I didn't over worry it. I just was like, all right, Hare Krishna, like let's see what happens.
Nice, thanks for sharing. Quite an adventure. Mission impossible for Krishna. And I wanted to just end with one, I just want to share, it's an old recording. It was from a tape from, I think from the 80s maybe. There was this singer, I think from Denmark, connected with the devotees, and he sang this recording, and it's just to remember that we're never alone when we're suffering. I really liked this as a kid. I used to listen to this when I would feel lonely. And I'll just play the first part of it, and I have it on SoundCloud if you want to hear it later. And you'll find someone who really cares. It's beautiful. And then he goes, Krishna is his name. Yeah, he says, Krishna is supreme. He'll never let you down. He'll always get the best parts out of you. It's really sweet. So if you're ever struggling, it's a nice song to listen to. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Queen Kunti ki jai, Gaur Premanandini.